Okay, kids, if you want, there's a table at the back, I'm told, where there's some activities. Oh, not if you're teenagers, though, Sam. You have to stay there. You have to listen. Last time I gave a talk in this hall, actually, it was to a ton of teenagers, and I had a bag full of sweets to make sure they listened. I haven't got that today, sorry. So you'll have to just listen anyway, or I'll turn the flashing lights on if you look like you're going to sleep. Okay, so have you ever wondered what God is like? Perhaps some of you have a lot, some maybe not. When you go out and ask people what God is like, a very interesting response is lots of people seem to look at him as an old man up in the sky with a big long beard looking down on us from heaven, perhaps approving, giving a big smile or waving his finger when he thinks we've done wrong, pouring out a bit of judgment, some people may think. But how can we really know what God is like? Well, it's by looking at Jesus. So in the words of Paul, he says he was God made in human likeness, man bearing all of the character of God. So I think it's great that over the last couple of months, we've been looking at this series, Jesus, his words, his works, and his ways. We've looked at his words, we've looked at his works, and we've looked a few weeks at his ways. So tonight, the talk is about Jesus has no favorites. So Jesus' way about how he treats us all the same, how he treats people, how he views us. We're going to look at their importance to him, people's importance, their equality before him, and how he has compassion on them. We're going to do this through a passage in Luke 8, verses 40 to 56. The same part of the story is also told in Matthew 9 and in Mark 5, if you want to go away and read them in the other Gospels later. I'm not actually going to read it. I'm going to tell it perhaps a bit more how I would if the youth were here. We tend not to just read the passages. We tend to tell the stories. So I'm going to give that a go. So Jesus had a lot of friends who were fishermen. So perhaps that's why when he traveled about a lot by boat across the Sea of Galilee. Or maybe he did that because he wanted to escape the large crowds of people that followed him. But on this particular day, Jesus landed on the shore. And he was met by a large crowd. They were all waiting to welcome him. From this crowd emerged Jairus, and he was a ruler of the synagogue, a very important man in their culture. He came up to Jesus, and he threw himself at Jesus' feet. This would have shocked the crowds, because men of that religious standing would not have behaved in this emotional way, especially not before Jesus. But this man's daughter was dying. She was only 12 years old, and the man was desperate. So he didn't seem to care who was watching. He wanted Jesus to come home with him and heal his daughter. And Jesus agreed. But before he could get to Jairus' house, he had a battle through the crowds who were almost crushing him. There were loads of people all gathering around. Now, amongst the crowds also was a lady, and she'd been bleeding for 12 years. Now, in Jesus' time, a lady who'd been bleeding was declared as unclean, and she would not have been allowed to have been in contact with people. And anyone who touched her would also have been made unclean. So this lady, who'd been bleeding for 12 years now, had spent all of her money on doctors, but they were unable to heal her, and she was just getting worse. And she was so insignificant, this lady. I keep calling her this lady because she didn't have a name. She wasn't named in any of the three Gospels, so she wasn't a significant person at all. But she pushed her way through the crowds to get to Jesus, and I wonder how she felt, because she was an outcast. She must have been terrified of people. She wasn't used to being around people, but yet, like Jairus, she was desperate. So she risked everything that she had to get to him. She got close up behind him, and she reached out and she just touched the hem of his garment. And then immediately the bleeding stopped. For a split second, she must have been on top of the world. So she'd been bleeding for 12 years. She touched Jesus and she's instantly healed. But then Jesus stopped and he turned around and he said, "Who's touched me?" Nobody owned up to it. So Peter, who was one of Jesus' closest friends, thought he'd be a little bit helpful and he said, "There's lots of people touching you. It could have been anyone." But you know, Jesus knew that the power had gone from him, so he persisted in asking who'd touched him. And the passage says that this woman, seeing that she could not go unnoticed, came trembling with fear and she fell at his feet. And then in the presence of all of these people, in front of the whole crowd, she explained why she'd reached out to him, and she told them that she had been healed. She'd come to Jesus trembling in fear, and I love this. Jesus responded to her in tenderness and in compassion. And do you know what? He called her daughter, which was a most affectionate term. He said, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. You know, it was her faith in Jesus that had made her well. I imagine most of the crowd were really amazed. They'd witnessed yet another amazing miracle that Jesus had done. But perhaps there was one man there who was a little bit not too bothered about that, and that was Jairus. He was probably there thinking, come on, Jesus, come on, time's running out for my little girl. But then just as Jairus was probably getting a little bit more hopeful because the conversation was coming to an end, somebody came and his worst fears were realized because they came from his house and they reported that his daughter had died. Don't bother the teacher anymore, they said. I wonder what must have been going through his mind at that point. I imagine it was something like, why did he have to stop and help her? Why did she touch him? But you know, Jesus' response was yet again a surprising. He overheard the conversation and he said to Jairus, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, just believe in me and she'll be healed. So what a roller coaster of emotions Jairus must have felt. He'd lowered himself, he threw himself at Jesus' feet out of desperation. Then Jesus said he'd come, so he had his hope built up again. Then this lady stopped him and he probably became really impatient, really frustrated. And now someone had come and said his daughter died, and now Jesus is saying, just trust in me. But Jairus, you know, he chose to trust and to continue to believe, and Jesus went with him to his house. And when they arrived, the proceedings had already begun, so the funeral had already started very soon after people died. People were wailing and people were mourning. And Jesus declared to them, stop wailing, she's not dead. They naturally laughed at her. They knew she was dead. Jesus didn't let that worry him. He sent them all out, and only Jairus and his wife and his three best friends, Peter, James, and John, were allowed in where the girl was lying. And then Jesus, again, full of compassion and tenderness, took the girl by the hand and he said, my child, get up. And I was reading Tim Keller, a very well-known American writer and pastor. He suggested that the words perhaps would have been better translated as, Henny, get up. Again, words full of love and compassion. The Bible says her spirit returned and at once she stood up. You know, her parents were astonished, and I imagine everyone around was completely and utterly astonished. You know, there's no exaggeration or embellishment here. The fact is that Jesus had the power to raise this girl from the dead. I would have been blown away if I'd been Jairus stood there. You know, Jesus, the person that we're called to trust in, had the power to raise someone from the dead. I don't know what you know about the author of the book, Luke, but Luke wrote the book, he said, to present an accurate account of Jesus Christ. Details and facts mattered to him. He was a doctor, and so he knew the details of illness as well. So we can be sure that that lady was healed instantly. And we can be sure that Jairus' daughter was dead, and it was just a simple touch that brought her back to life. So let's just take a look at the two characters in the story. Let's think a bit about what we know about them, what we can learn about them, and very importantly, what we can learn about Jesus and the way in which he engaged with them. So firstly, let's look at the woman, what we know about her. Well, firstly, as I've said numerous times, she'd been bleeding for 12 years, a long time. No doctors, no amount of money. She couldn't get help from anyone. She reached out to Jesus when no one else could help her. Do we need to wait, do you think, until we're that desperate? Or can we reach out now? Well, maybe there is someone who is actually at that point of desperation. Well, if that's you, don't go away, you know, put your faith in Jesus, in the same that the lady did. Put your hope in the one who has the power over everything. Her illness caused her to be rejected by society, and she was made an outcast. No one had touched her for 12 years. She must have been very lonely. I don't know, I'd quite like it if people didn't keep coming up giving me hugs and all that. But most people perhaps would feel a little bit lonely. Yeah, touched from Jesus, and her life was changed in an instant. She was instantly healed of that. She could be around people again. What struck me is she was different from the rest of the crowd, who were just curious. Today, many people are familiar with Jesus, yet their lives aren't changed because he's just a passing acquaintance in their life. She wanted his touch. And I guess the question is, do we want his touch? Do we want to just show up to church, look on from a distance, or do we really want him to touch our lives? In all three Gospels, as I said, this lady wasn't even named. She wasn't even considered worthy to be named who she was. Yet Jesus paused in his day for her. Being unclean, being insignificant, not having a name, didn't make this woman any less deserving of Jesus' touch. And one last thing to note about the woman was Jesus called her daughter. And when Jesus calls you daughter, does anything else matter? And Jesus calls us his sons and daughters too. So what about Jairus and his daughter in contrast? Well, he was a synagogue leader. He was a highly respected man. You know, it was really unusual for a leader to fall at the feet of a traveling preacher like Jesus. But he did. And why did he do it? Well, he did it because his only daughter, who was just 12 years old, was dying. He was desperate. He would have done anything to see his daughter live. And he pleaded with Jesus. He seemed oblivious to who was watching. He didn't actually care, I don't think, if he made a fool of himself. He just wanted Jesus to come and heal his daughter. He may have had a very different standing in society to the woman, but he also was desperate. You know, they both recognized that when no one else could help them, Jesus could. And they were prepared to do whatever it took to get that help from him. Being wealthy, you know, didn't make him immune to tragedy. And it didn't make him any less deserving of a touch from Jesus. When someone came from Jairus' house and they reported that she was dead, he was faced with a choice. He could believe the fact, or he could listen to Jesus' voice and continue to believe so that she could be healed. And I just wonder, do we look at the things of this world, do we look at things through the world's eyes, as, you know, Jairus' daughter was dead, or do we ask Jesus to look at things through his eyes, where he could see that this girl could still be healed? Well, then when they arrived at the house, Jesus only took his three closest disciples in with him, along with the parents. And as I read this, I just wondered if maybe one of the reasons, and I'm suggesting it's only one of the reasons, that he did this was because he wanted the parents to feel and know his love and his care for them. There weren't just lots of people around. This wasn't just a miracle that was about showing that he had the power to raise someone from the dead, because he did. But I just wondered if he wanted Jairus and his family to just know his tender love and compassion just for them as well. You know, in Jewish culture, there's strict laws about what made a person unclean. And to touch either of these ladies would have made Jesus unclean. Yet he didn't appear to care. And I believe that this shows how much he loves and he values people, all people. And he showed this by reaching out to them, by touching them, and by making them clean. I don't know if any of you who've been around the church many years would remember our old hymn where it says, he breaks the power of cancelled sin, he sets the prisoner free, his blood can make the foulest clean, his blood avail for me. You know, God can turn dirty outcasts into his beloved sons and daughters. There's nothing in our lives that's too messed up for God to touch us and change us. You know, they both reached out to Jesus and they both had really serious problems, yet nothing was too big for Jesus, even bringing Jairus' daughter back from the dead. You know, what problems do you have today? Are you looking for God's help? How desperate are you? Are you like the crowd, maybe? You were kind of curiously bumping along, looking to see what Jesus is going to do next. Are you desperate for God to touch your life? I think the other thing it tells us is no one's immune to suffering, whether you're of a high position, whether you're a low position. Gaining a better position in society isn't going to mean life's going to be perfect. You know, the only thing that can really change your life, that can really help you, is to reach out to Jesus, is an encounter with Jesus. I thought it'd be good to just take a really brief look at the variety of people that Jesus associated with, the variety of people that were touched by Jesus that we can read about in the Bible, that lives were changed when they encountered him. So the first one I thought of was a tax collector. So tax collectors in those days, they were considered as liars, as cheats. They used to rip people off. They used to take far more than they were supposed to from people. But you know, Jesus identified with Matthew, the tax collector. His life was changed. He gave up his job and he followed Jesus. And then there was another tax collector, Zacchaeus. You must have all heard about Zacchaeus. Well, when he encountered Jesus and spent time with him, he gave half of his possessions away, and it says he gave back four times what he had taken back to the people. Then we heard the other week, I think, about the Roman centurion. He wasn't a Jew, but yet his faith in Jesus allowed his servant to be healed. There was a woman, she was caught in adultery, yet Jesus rescued her, and he told her to go and sin no more. Then there was a young boy who Jesus cast demon out of. You know, we're never too young to have our lives changed by Jesus. In fact, there is a passage, a lovely passage, where Jesus calls all the little children to come to him. Then there was the thief on the cross hanging beside Jesus, whose eternal destiny was changed that moment when he encountered Jesus. There was Bartimaeus. He was born blind, but after encountering Jesus, he was able to see. There was regular housewives. You might know Mary and Martha. You know, they encountered Jesus. There was Saul, one of my favorite characters that I love to talk about. But he was a murderer. He murdered Jesus' followers. But yet he encountered Jesus on the road to Damascus, and he became one of those followers who risked his life to follow Jesus. There were many fishermen. So Peter, Andrew, lots of them became his disciples. That was just regular tradesmen of the day. There were sick people. They were outcasts with leprosy. In fact, I could go on and on and on and on and on. But I hope you get the idea that Jesus associated with people from all walks of life, from high position to low, the rich, the poor, the young, the old. And Jesus treated them all equally. No person was beyond the loving touch of Jesus. As I looked through the list of people in the Bible, one that I did want to just mention that a little bit more was Thomas, the disciple. You may have heard him called Doubting Thomas. Well, he'd traveled with Jesus for 3 whole years. He'd heard his words. He'd seen him heal people. He'd seen many miracles. He'd seen him raise people from the dead. But you know, when he'd heard that Jesus himself had raised from the dead, what did he say? He said, "Unless I see the scars in his hand and in his side, I won't believe." Well, surely Jesus would have gone and, you know, given him, you know, but he didn't. He didn't scold him. He didn't shout at him. Actually, he treated him with tenderness and compassion. He appeared to him and he showed him the scars in his hand and his side. He responded to Thomas with that same tenderness and that same compassion. And, you know, I believe that if we cry out to God today with our hurts, with our problems, with our struggles, he will show us that same love, that same tenderness, that same compassion that he showed those people that encountered him whilst he walked on the earth. So don't delay. Don't wait till you go home. Don't wait till next week. Don't wait till next year. You know, reach out to him today. He is that same God. All these people in the Bible that encountered him, he's that same God, and you can encounter him today. I've been reading this book lately, and there was a chapter in it which was entitled The God Who Loved, and I just loved these couple of phrases. And it says, "You find Jesus with a heart as big as eternity." I love that phrase. And he looked over the crowd that seemed leaderless, they're spiritually empty and lost. Jesus described them as sheep without a shepherd. And then he just went on to describe Jesus's compassion. And then it said, when Jesus was denouncing people of their sin, when he was telling them, afterwards he'd go away and he'd weep over the city. And I just felt, are we looking at people and are we crying tears of compassion over them like Jesus did? Looking back at today's reading, Jairus' need was far more urgent than the sick lady's. You know, his daughter was dying. She was about to die. But you know, Jesus paused for that lady, for that woman, and our cares and our needs are never too small and they're never too insignificant for Jesus to care about. If you bring them to him, he won't dismiss you. He didn't dismiss her, and he cares for you just the same. I also wondered, are we often really busy running around doing really urgent things, really important things, that sometimes people that God wants us to stop for, we kind of run on by, like that lady. Would we have just run on by because we had an urgent call? We were off to see this little girl who was dying. But we should know that if we're doing what God wants, we should be looking out, because Jesus, God, will take care of those urgent things. He took care of Jairus' daughter. She was still raised from the dead. So we should have our eyes open to look for all who need him then. So what about us? What about our lives? Do we hold to these values that everyone matters? Do we have compassion on everyone? Are we prepared to take the gospel to people from all walks of life? To introduce our friend Jesus so that he can touch and change their lives. So next Saturday, we're going to be outside the shops and on the 19th singing, telling people, offering people the opportunity to reach out to hear about Jesus. And one of the things we're going to offer them is this Good News newspaper, which you can have a look at after. But I was looking through this just to see what was in it, because there's nothing worse than giving things out and not knowing what you've given out. And it really struck me as I read through the newspaper, you know, God does the same today in the 21st century. So in this newspaper, there's the story of a lady called Carly Fiorini. Now, she was a really successful business lady. She was the CEO of Hewlett-Packard, and she was wealthy, she was successful, she's the first woman to ever lead one of the top 20 companies in the United States. I was interested to read, I didn't know this, that she actually stood as a candidate against Trump in the recent election. But one of the headlines in her story was Change at Christmas. Carly Fiorini prayed for a sign on Christmas Eve and she got her answer on Christmas Day. You know, she, like Jairus, was important, she was powerful, yet when she cried out to God, he touched her. And likewise, on that same page in the center, there's the story of a guy called Brian Morris, who was in so much debt because of his addiction to drugs that he tried to smuggle drugs into the UK. He got caught and he was put behind bars. His son was thrown into foster care, you know, and he was desperate. Yet in prison, when he was at the lowest ebb of his life, he reached out to Jesus and Jesus changed his life. He's since written books, he's volunteered at prison fellowships, he's volunteered at street pastors, night shelters, he became a pastor, he went to Bible college. You know, at the very opposite end of the spectrum to Carly, at Christmas time, he cried out to God and a touch from God changed his life as well. So God continues in the 21st century to reach out to people from all walks of life. He wants everyone in this community, or whatever community we live in, to hear the good news and to have the opportunity to be touched by him. There's another guy in the United States, Bill Hybels. He's the pastor of a big church, Willow Creek in California. And one of the phrases that he often uses is this, that the local church is the hope of the world. And I don't know if you recall, there's two parables later on in Luke 15, the one of the lost coin and the one of the lost sheep, where Jesus, I think through these parables, wants to teach us that every single person is important. They're all his treasures. He doesn't want any one of them to be lost. And those treasures he's entrusted to us. And so if we then are the local church, as Bill says, if we're the hope of the world, how can we bring this hope, this love, this compassion, this tender love to this community, or again, whatever community you live in? I wonder if we could just spend 2 minutes just considering some of the people that live in our community, So let's just pray for a minute that, Lord, as I just talk about some of these people now, some of these people who live in our community, would you just touch our hearts, open up our hearts, give us a heart for them, the heart that you have for them, Lord. Amen. So the first people I thought of when I thought the people in the community were the children. Jesus said, as I said earlier, bring the little children to me. And we as a church on a Friday night in this very room, you know, we run a kids club because we want Jesus to touch the kids in our community. Every one of them matters. You know, is God giving you a heart for those kids? Have you got a compassion for them? I was quite interested to go back to the story of Brian, the drug smuggler. It was said when he was in that prison cell, what brought him to Jesus was the memory of all the Sunday school stories that he's heard. You know, I don't think we'll ever know the full fruits that kids' work produces, the telling of Jesus to children. So, you know, is God giving you a heart of compassion for children? And then what about the youth? These are the ones that I love. This is the one that God's touched my heart for. Teenage years can be some of the most difficult, challenging out there, looking for where to go. Is that right? There are so many young people in our community who are really searching for their way in life. And you know, if we don't get out there and share Jesus with them, they'll find something else. I heard this statistic, I don't know if it's completely true, but I don't think it's far off, which said that 85% of people who come to know Christ, who have their lives changed by Christ, come before the age of 18. That's very high, isn't it? But if that is true, then hey, we need to get out there and we need to be sharing Jesus with them. We need to get on our knees, we need to pray for them, we need to be desperate for them. And one thing I just want to say is, quite often people find young people challenging and they talk about them, but these young people are people's sons and daughters. Their hearts are breaking for them. God's hearts are breaking for them. Our hearts should be breaking for them. Our communities are also full of broken families, people who are hurting. You know, is God moving you to just help broken families? There's many organizations like Care for the Family that you could go and help people. There's single people in our community. Is God giving you a heart for them? There's people struggling to bring up children. Can we support them in any way? There's people with financial worries. I know on this estate there are lots of people who are sitting on masses of debt because they so desperately want to give their families everything that they can, everything this world offers. You know, can we help them? There are people who are sick. There are people who are dying. Is God breaking your heart for them? Or maybe there's people who've lost loved ones. And then this one strikes me, elderly people. You know, generations ago, people lived in the same community, didn't they? Generation after generation after generation. But now that doesn't happen. And there's lots of people just on this estate who are just lonely. Is God giving you a heart of compassion for them? Is there something you can do to reach out to share God's compassionate heart? Believe it or not, there are actually people on this estate who take drugs, who deal drugs. You know, has God given you a heart for them? Is your heart breaking for them? Can you reach out to them? And I was a bit shocked. I was talking to Anna recently. There are people still in our community who are in slavery. They've been trafficked, and there are organizations out there to help them. I must confess, I didn't realize that that was right here on our doorsteps, but it is, you know. There's so many people out there who need that touch of God. Are we going to seek God's heart for them? Are we going to open up our hearts and let him touch us for them? You know, Jesus had no favorites. There's a passage in Luke which says, "Then Jesus said to the host, 'When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you'll be blessed. Although they can't repay you back, you'll be repaid back at the resurrection of the righteous.'" You know, invite those who can't repay you back. God's kingdom is for everyone. I just wondered if perhaps you're feeling like, oh my gosh, I can't, that's just all too much. I can't love people like that. I can't do that. But we can. And do you know why we can? Because God, the creator of this universe, in the form of the Holy Spirit, lives within each one of us. So we can do the things that Jesus did. We can be Jesus because God, the creator of the universe, is living within us right here, right now. You know, in verse 53, when Jesus said that she's not dead, but just asleep, it was recorded that they laughed at him. The world laughed in Jesus' face, but that didn't stop him. You know, when Jesus was hanging on the cross, he was bearing all the sins of the world, my sins, your sins. Do you know what they did? They mocked him and they poked fun at him. He knows exactly what it's like to be laughed at, but we shouldn't let that stop us, people laughing at us, living for him. And lastly, as I considered this passage, I noted that everywhere that Jesus went, okay, he was followed by crowds of people, all wanting a bit of his time. It must have been exhausting. I'm sure we can all identify with that. We get tired. And, you know, Jesus was human like us. He must have got tired too. But what really struck me was in the busyness, in his tiredness, he made time for people. No one was too insignificant, the unnamed lady. No one was too important, Jairus, to deserve his attention. And you know what? Neither are we. God has time for you. He wants you to bring your life to him. He wants you to bring the good, the bad, the pains, the hurt, the sickness. He wants you to reach out to him. He wants you to touch him. And then he wants to love you with a tender and a compassionate heart. So don't go away from here today like the crowds who perhaps brushed shoulders with Jesus but not really encountered him. Reach out to him now like Jairus and like the sick lady did. Reach out to him and let him touch you. He wants us also, though, to make time for people, not just our favorite friends, but all who he brings across our path, everyone in this community. You know, Jesus, it struck me, cries with tears of compassion over our community, and we need to also. And out of that heart of compassion and that heart of tenderness, we need to reach out to them. Okay, Mark?
Thank you, Claire. You know, just struck me as Claire was speaking that the one we've come here to worship today is the one who met with individuals. He didn't see a crowd when crowds of people came to him. He saw individual people and their needs. He responded to personal needs. And as Claire said, when somebody reached out to him, even in the middle of a crowd, he responded. So as we draw towards a close tonight, I want to provide you with an opportunity tonight to reach out to him. You know, that lady, I was thinking, I've never thought about this before. I don't know whether Jesus walked right by that lady. And if he did, maybe it was because he knew she needed him. But it could also be that lady had to fight her way through crowds of people to be able to reach out to him. She could have easily let him pass by and she'd have missed the opportunity to be blessed by him. Jairus could have missed the opportunity. So easy for us to miss it. So as we finish with a couple of songs tonight, I just want to offer you what Jesus offers you, which is the opportunity tonight, in the hustle and bustle of this meeting, in all the things that are going on, to reach out to him, because he knows where you're at. Maybe, as Claire talked about Carly Fiorina, you just need him to touch you tonight, to reach out and bless you in some way. Maybe there's something you've been praying for that tonight he just wants you to reach out to him for him to respond. We're just going to sing a couple of songs and provide you with that opportunity. Don't lose it in the hustle and bustle. Push through the crowd to reach out and touch him and allow him to bless you. And you know, just I want to say one thing as we start to sing. You know, you guys are amazing. I was sitting at the back there and I'm just thinking about the chaos of this meeting. And you're sitting here in your coats, you're on garden chairs, you're standing up, you're on mats, all kinds of things, you know. I was just truly blessed by seeing how we've come together tonight in this way. And if I am, I know he is. So allow him to respond to your needs tonight. Reach out, either sit where you are, stand up. If you want us to pray, we'd love to pray with you. Maybe at the back when this is all over, we'll have two or three. You know, come and find me or Pete or Gareth or Ange or, you know, somebody, and we'll pray with you about this tonight. Take this opportunity, reach out to him and allow him to reach back to you. Let's stand together.